Welcome to Independent Americans. Welcome to episode 104. I'm your host, Paul Rykoff. Now, more than any other time, now is a time to stay vigilant.
At 1:49 p.m., I received a frantic call from then Chief of United States Capitol Police Stephen Sun, where he informed me that the security perimeter of the United States Capitol had been breached by hostile rioters. Chief Sun, his voice cracking with emotion, indicated that there was a dire emergency at the Capitol, and he requested the immediate assistance of as many available National Guardsmen that I could muster. Immediately after that 1:49 call, I alerted the U.S. Army senior leadership of the request. The approval for Chief Sun's request would eventually come from the Acting Secretary of Defense and be relayed to me by Army senior leaders at 5:08 p.m., about 3 hours and 19 minutes later.
That's Major General William Walker, Commanding General of the D.C. National Guard. 3 hours and 19 minutes. It took 3 hours and 19 minutes to approve sending the National Guard to defend the United States Capitol. The United States Capitol was being overrun. The Vice President and Speaker of the House were being hunted by terrorists. Capitol Hill Police Officer Brian Sicknick and others were being pummeled to death. The most real and present danger the Capitol has ever faced was unfolding. And it took 3 hours and 19 minutes for Acting Secretary of Defense Chris Miller to authorize sending in the National Guard. On a battlefield of any kind, 3 hours and 19 minutes is a lifetime. Imagine waiting 3 hours and 19 minutes for a response to Pearl Harbor. Imagine waiting 3 hours and 19 minutes for a response to planes hitting the World Trade Center and the Pentagon. Shit, imagine waiting 3 hours and 19 minutes for a response if someone was trying to break into your house and you called 911. General William Walker called 911, and he got put on hold for 3 hours and 19 minutes. America was on hold for 3 hours and 19 minutes. And people died. Terrorists hunted members of Congress. America was humiliated, and our Capitol almost fell. And as we unpacked it in hearings this week, and as we will unpack it in weeks to come, the failures are becoming clear. The failures were predictable, and the failures may have been intentional. For weeks on this show last fall, I warned you about the unprecedented danger of Trump's purge of the Pentagon. He cleared out Secretary of Defense Mark Esper and numerous senior Pentagon leaders who might try to stop him from doing what he wanted. Trump removed them in the final weeks of his presidency, and he replaced them with enablers, loyalists who could be counted on, true believers, believers that included Acting Secretary of Defense Chris Miller, the man on the other end of General Walker's 911 call for help, the man who waited 3 hours and 19 minutes to send reinforcements that could stop an overthrow of our government. 3 hours and 19 minutes. Miller was unqualified. Miller's loyalty was questionable. Miller's response was a failure. And Officer Brian Sicknick died for it. This is not that complicated. This was entirely predictable. When the call went out for help, the Trump loyalists didn't respond. They didn't react. They didn't help. They quibbled and they delayed. They sandbagged. General Walker testified that Army senior leaders said that it, quote, didn't look good, or it wouldn't be, quote, good optics. He said that quote, they further stated it could incite the crowd if they sent in the National Guard. Well, they didn't seem to care about any of that shit in June when they used a National Guard to stomp peaceful protesters in Lafayette Park so President Mayhem could get a photo op with a Bible in front of St. John's Church. They weren't too concerned about optics then, and they seemed to move pretty quickly. It didn't take 3 hours and 19 minutes. General Walker testified that he was told that then-Secretary of the Army Ryan McCarthy was meeting with then-Acting Secretary of Defense Chris Miller, and they could not be on the call. But the senior military leaders who were on the call said it was their best advice not to have uniformed guardsmen on Capitol grounds. Senior leaders said the National Guard shouldn't respond to stop a terrorist attack at our Capitol. Guess who one of those senior leaders was? Lieutenant General Charles Flynn. Charles Flynn. Brother of Michael Flynn. Yep, that Michael Flynn. Trump's first national security advisor, who was pardoned after twice pleading guilty to lying to the FBI during the special counsel investigation into Russian interference in the 2016 election and the Trump campaign. The same Michael Flynn who advocated for declaring martial law as a part of an effort to overturn the election. The same Michael Flynn who promoted the QAnon conspiracy theories, which were supported by the rioters on January 6th. The same Michael Flynn who wanted all of this. And his brother was one of the few senior leaders on the call that recommended against sending troops to protect the Capitol. And here's another very troubling part. For days after the Washington Post reported that General Charles Flynn was involved in that key meeting, the Army denied it. They denied that Flynn was there. Now, this was still before the inauguration and the change of leadership at the Pentagon. But Donald Trump's Army leadership denied it, despite multiple inquiries from the press. 3 hours and 19 minutes. 3 hours and 19 minutes. Trump denied, Flynn denied, the Army denied, and Officer Brian Sicknick died. And if you're not angry, you're not paying attention. Our national security was compromised by enemies from within. Enemies who stormed the Capitol and killed a Capitol Hill cop and tried to kill members of Congress. And enemies who worked on the inside and slow rolled the response that could have saved lives. And attention must be paid. Now, more than ever, attention must be paid to what was done and said inside the Pentagon in those critical days and weeks before the attack on the Capitol. Attention must be paid to how they failed. And attention must be paid to how failure could happen again. As early as today, March 4th. March 4th is pretty significant. The House scrapped plans for a Thursday session on March 4th after security officials warned of a possible plot by an unnamed militant group to breach the Capitol again. Officials warned of credible threats of violence being circulated by right-wing extremists that March 4th is what they're calling the true inauguration day, when former President Trump will be sworn in for a second term. More on that coming up with our guest. But if you're listening to this on March 4th, it could be happening right now. Or it could not happen, and it could be squashed, and we may never know about it. But especially now, especially around the Pentagon and all things that touch it, attention must be paid. There's a new Secretary of Defense now, Lloyd Austin, who I think is off to a strong start, and a new Commander-in-Chief, Joe Biden, who's also off to a pretty good start. And a new team in senior leadership at the Pentagon, many who I know personally and I trust to get things back on track and protect America as best they can, to stand as truly independent Americans and put country over politics or any leader, like how it used to be. But there's still no accountability for the failures that preceded them. And we found out this week that there are over 2,000 active FBI investigations related to the attack. And there is still not even a focus on the magnitude of national security threats we faced and we still face today. The January 6th attack was 2 months ago. Our government was almost toppled, almost decapitated, just 2 months ago. But most of America has already forgotten, and most of the media has moved on, as they so often do on issues of national security. Because the inner workings of Pentagon leadership changes, or troop movements in foreign countries, or missiles landing near our troops overseas, it's all become commonplace. Forever war is now expected. And like much of the country feels about the pandemic right now, the American people are tired of hearing about places like Afghanistan and Syria. But no matter how tired you are, America is still very much at war. Our sons and daughters are at war in places ranging from Syria to Somalia. But the media isn't interested. Instead, they're obsessed over Trump's CPAC appearance, Ted Cruz's travel, and changes to Mr. Potato Head and Dr. Seuss. Their focus is not keeping America safe. Their focus is ratings. If they cared enough about our national security, they wouldn't have amplified and normalized President Mayhem for so long. President Mayhem was a threat to our national security, built by, propelled by, and will be exonerated by much of the American media that knows ad money comes from manufactured outrage, bullshit controversies, overinflated opinion, amplified conflict, and all things Donald Trump. Ad dollars don't increase when you cover the nuances of missile attacks or sanctions and weapon deals with foreign countries. Ad dollars don't go up when you show the coffins of dead Americans coming home. And of course, the pandemic is real and should dominate attention. And so are some of the controversies, like the one swamping New York Governor Andrew Cuomo right now. But most of the media can't be counted on to walk and chew gum at the same time. And they especially can't be counted on to cover national security anymore. And most of our partisan politicians can't be counted on to focus on it either. You don't raise money for your reelection campaign by laying out a thoughtful plan for engagement in Syria, or a detailed way to get out of Afghanistan, or a specific campaign to end the AUMF, the authorized use of military force. National security isn't hot anymore. But national security is always most important. It's not most urgent for most Americans in the media until it is. Then, America remembers painfully that organized radicals with guns really do want to kill and kidnap our political leaders. Young men and women still do come home in flag-draped coffins. And enemies still do have nukes. And nukes are really fucking scary. National security is always the highest stakes possible. And especially now. Eternal vigilance is the price of freedom, and nowhere is that vigilance needed more than around our national security. So in our quest to remain vigilant, we must continue to focus on the most urgent threats to you, to our country, and to our future. And right now, in America, there's a smorgasbord of massively important national security shit sitting on the massive table of problems sitting in the Oval Office in front of Joe Biden's tired eyes. And we're going to break them down as often as possible. On this show, when it's required, I'll bring on a guest to give us an overview of the world's most pressing threats, and we'll bring it home. And if there's an upside to the attack on the Capitol, like the attack on 9/11, and maybe the pandemic too, maybe it's that we don't have to work so hard to remind you why national security is so different. It's literally a matter of life and death. Your life or your death. When it comes to national security, stakes is always high. Stakes is high. You know them stakes is high. When you talking about five. Y'all know them stakes is and they've never been higher than right now. Or maybe 2 months ago. It's still hard to tell exactly. But years from now, we may look back at 2020 and 2021 in the same way we look back now at the 1962 Cuban Missile Crisis. Only in the future will we really understand how dangerous the times we were living in really were. In the future, we'll find out how close Mike Pence was to being killed, how close Nancy Pelosi was to being captured, how close Iran was to hitting New York City, how close President Mayhem was to pushing the button. March is here, but winter is not over. Punxsutawney Phil warned us that we'd have 6 more weeks of winter, so that leaves us with at least 2 more weeks of the hardest winter of our lifetime. From the lights going out in Texas, to the missiles falling in Iraq, to the bodies falling from COVID, to the masks falling prematurely nationwide, March is coming in like a lion. And it might stay a lion all month long. So strap in. We're not out of the woods yet. As I break it down with our guest, the body politic that is America may be on the mend and somewhat stabilized, but we're still in the ICU, and we could fall backward fast. Remember the warning of Capitol Hill police officer, 9/11 hero, and Army veteran, Captain Carnicia Mendoza.
I received various awards from the Army and the Capitol Police, to include an award for recovery efforts during the Pentagon attack. Unfortunately, I didn't save any lives, but there are certain lessons that always stuck with me after 9/11. One of those lessons is knowing the unthinkable is always possible, so be ready.
Now is not the time to let our guard down. Now is not the time to ease up. Now is not the time to get lazy. Now, more than any other time in our lifetime, is the time to stay vigilant. The unthinkable is always possible, so be ready. The vaccine is coming. Spring is coming. Our VC day is coming. Better days are coming. But they won't come automatically. They'll require hard work. They'll require teamwork. They'll require leadership. They'll require sacrifice. They'll require kindness. They'll require helpers. They'll require discipline. And they'll require vigilance. Because vigilance is the price of freedom. And in our journey to stay vigilant, I'll continue to bring you guests that can break it down, lay it out, and arm you with the information you need to stay ahead of the curve and to stay in a leadership role, whether it's in your job, in your community, or just in your apartment, or just on your TV and Facebook page. Especially at a time when both parties are failing us, at a time when the media is failing us. This is the time for vigilance, for independence, for leadership, and of course for the five eyes: independence, integrity, information, inspiration, and impact. This is a time when more and more of us are independent Americans. And this is the time to bring back our friend, one of the most popular guests of all time on this show, the Master Chief himself, Malcolm Nance. And this is the time to go on a national security world tour. Malcolm Nance is back, America's favorite terrorism expert. Malcolm Nance is a decorated military veteran, an astute analyst, and a truth teller. He's MSNBC's terrorism analyst and a New York Times bestselling author. He's a retired Navy Master Chief. He served as a specialist in naval cryptology and was involved in counterterrorism, intelligence, and combat operations around the world. He also served as an instructor at SEER School, Survival, Evasion, Resistance, and Escape. It's a badass school. He's also one of the most interesting guys anywhere. The man has stories. The man also has enemies, foreign and domestic. And that now includes Fox News primetime host, Laura Ingraham. Why are defense leaders guarding against extremist strikes again this week on or around March 4th? Why is that date important? What's the story behind the missile strikes in Syria ordered by Biden? What'll happen next with Russia after new sanctions? With our country slammed by COVID, will our enemies use this opportunity to strike? Where's the next hotspot in the world for the U.S. military? And why the hell did Laura Ingraham and Fox News turn up the heat and put a target on the back of one of our most frequent guests and a decorated Navy veteran? Malcolm's going to take us on a tour of the landscape to find out. Last fall, Malcolm joined us on this show and predicted the kind of post-election violence we saw in Washington on January 6th. Back in episode 13 and episode 94, he predicted national security threats to come. And he joins us again on Independent Americans Now to share some new predictions. We'll speak to him from his writing lair in upstate New York, filled with fascinating stuff from a life of world travels. A life holding the line for America on issues of national security, when we needed it the most. Independent Americans are growing in numbers all across America. And nowhere is independence more important than in the area of national security. It's why we require our military to stay independent of politics. And it's why January 6th showed us what can happen when it's not. National security is the one place we should be able to unite, find common ground, and seek common cause. And it's the one place we need independent Americans more than anywhere else. We're facing a new normal in America, a messy new normal. And it's going to be messy for a while. But the ones who can push through it, lead us through it, and take us to a higher place afterwards are not the partisans. It's not the professional politicians. It's not the blowhard pundits. It's not the summer soldiers or the sunshine patriots. It's the true patriots. It's the winter soldiers, the real leaders, the most important independent Americans of all. Those in uniform and those in the intelligence agencies, those holding the line inside the Pentagon and all around the world, in places we know about and places we don't. Our national security, our international reputation, our future as a nation depend on it. Now more than ever, they and we have to stay vigilant. And as we dug into last episode, we also still need to find and share hope. Because hope is the oxygen of democracy. And the hope is out there, and it's rising. This week, I spoke to a fourth grade class on Long Island, New York, about the American Revolution, about civics, about the times we face, about leadership, and about how they can be helpers. And I'm talking to this fourth grade class on Zoom. They're all behind glass like bank tellers. They've all got masks on. And I noticed all the kids had coats on. And so I asked them, did you just come back from recess, or is it just a really cold classroom? And their teacher, their brave teacher, my friend, Marnie Zeidel, told me bluntly that they were wearing coats so they can keep the air flowing. The windows are always open. They have to do that every day, even when it's 15 degrees outside. That's what our kids are enduring right now. I've never even been inside my kindergartner's classroom, but I saw this classroom from Zoom, and I've seen my son's classroom in pictures and videos. And these kids are the helpers. These fourth graders I talk to, they're the hope. Some of them want to be football players. Some of them want to go with NASA to Mars. Some of them want to join the military. Some of them want to be teachers. All of them just want to be kids. And right now, we're asking them to do so much more. But they are the hope. They are the oxygen of our democracy. I had a great time talking to this class, and they left me hopeful. And that night, my friend Marnie, the teacher, texted me to ask if my mom needed a vaccine appointment. I mentioned my mom in the talk to the kids. And I told her, thankfully, my mom was good now. She had gotten her first shot. But Marnie told me that she and some of the other teachers, in their off time, have now helped 567 people get vaccine appointments. They're helping hundreds of people navigate the websites and waiting lists and get appointments at state vaccination sites. And today, they got a vaccine appointment for my brother's mother-in-law, who is older and been going through chemotherapy for months. Marnie got her an appointment in 24 hours, and tonight, she's driving home with a vaccination. And tomorrow, she'll go back to chemo. But tonight and tomorrow, thanks to a helper, a teacher who does this for free in her off time, Gail's got hope. More hope than she's had in the last year. And so does our whole family. And so do over 567 other families, thanks to Marnie and her crew. They represent the best of what this country's all about. They are the hope. They are the hope that is the oxygen of our democracy. So hang in there. Tough days are still ahead. But hope is coming. Help is coming. And that help is each of us. Each of us can contribute to the war effort, the war against extremism, the war against our enemies, foreign and domestic, the war against the virus. Each of us, by helping each other, by getting the vaccine or just wearing a mask, are helping our country and supporting our national security. National security is a team game, just like democracy is a team game. And this winter, and in the next few months especially, it's time for that teamwork to shine, for America to emerge stronger at the broken places. And we're all on this bumpy, hard ride together. So let's take a tour across the landscape of our national defense with a one-of-a-kind tour guide. A guy who's been deep in the fight and is in a whole new kind of fight right now for a whole new time. Welcome to a look inside the arena, the battlefield of information. Welcome to a world tour of our national defense and our media and our political landscape. Welcome to the ultimate team game. Welcome to Independent Americans, episode 104. Ladies and gentlemen, independent Americans around the country and around the world. Most of the media and most of the country is not talking about national security, but we will, we must, and it's a part of staying vigilant, especially in these times. So I am very happy to bring back a returning champion, the Nostradamus of national security over the last couple of months. He joined us in October before the election, and then on January 12th, right after the insurrection, the great and powerful Malcolm Nance rejoins us here on Independent Americans Now. Welcome back, my friend.
Do not trust the man behind the curtain. No. That's all I'm saying, folks.
You know, I've sometimes tried to be the Tony Romo of politics in my predictions. You've been the Nostradamus of national security. I want to rip through a lot of stuff that most of the media is not. And frankly, especially the cable networks that you and I are on. I want to talk about March 4th and what could be coming this week. I want to talk about the really underreported strike in Syria, Biden's first that we know of strike ordered as president, Russia and the Ukraine. I want to talk about your domestic battle now with Fox News and everything else that's unfolding around us. But first off, how are you and where are you? You're in a very cool room. Last time we talked to you, you were in your skiff. Now you're in another cool looking place. So how are you? It's been a wild time. And where are you now?
I'm very well. I'm ensconced in my secret lair in upstate New York. And where it is a very, very warm 28 degrees today. So we still have snow on here, but it's going to get as high as 32 or 33. So, you know, things are pretty nice now because it's warmer since I woke up and it was 16 this morning. So I'm in my writing office. We have a house that we renovated, we bought, that was a ruin about 15 years ago, my lovely late wife and I. And we have been renovating it since 2007. And this is my This is the room that has the kind of I love me stuff that, you know, all of us in the military or the intelligence community have, but we don't let anyone into this room. This, so there's a lot of stuff on here. I have a, you know, print here from, what's his name? Durant, the guy who was shot down in Somalia, signed print by him on, you know, the battle of, Mogadishu and the rescue of Super 64, his helicopter. And then I have another print here, of which there are only 911 copies, that is actually restricted. You have to be at that agency to get it. And a whole bunch of other cool stuff. Like,
what is it kind of looks like a rural Oval Office kind of look. It's got a beautiful blue to it, an infantry blue. And for folks that never watch videos, this will all be on our YouTube page so you can see the magical writing layer of Malcolm Nance. There's a really cool picture behind you that looks like a naval ship being blown up. What is that?
That actually is the first piece of art I ever bought when I was living in Rota, Spain. And it is a Spanish version of the burning of the Philadelphia, the famous painting of the USS Philadelphia that was captured in Tripoli Harbor in, I want to say, in 1805 in the Barbary Wars. And since they couldn't float the ship out and they had already taken the crew hostage, they decided to land on this ship and set it on fire.
Wow.
And the artist, the guy insisted that it was a Spanish galleon. And I said, believe me, I know this painting. This is one of the most famous paintings in naval history back there. But in between that, my Libyan surfboard and my New Guinea, you know, battle shield and penis gourd, this is the sort of place that...
Wait a minute. You know, hold on. Interviewer's privilege here. Penis gourd? What is a penis gourd, Malcolm? And why do you have one?
Well, I did a security study for the Peace Corps, their global security study back in the year 2000. And while I was there, I went to New Guinea, Papua New Guinea for them. And this is called a penis gourd. And what it is, it's a wickered sort of device that they wear around their waist. And this is pretty much all they wear, you know? And so it's like man junk body armor.
Wow.
And New Guinea is a fascinating place. Papua New Guinea, I could have spent the rest of my life there studying tribalism and war. Just insane.
I'm so glad I asked. This is why we do video. So folks can go to independentamericans.us and see the penis gourd, see what it looks like. Interestingly,
that's a good one too.
Yeah, I know about Papua New Guinea because my grandfather was there during World War II. When he was on his tour of Asia during World War II, he was in Papua New Guinea and the Philippines and Guam and other places like that.
Army guy.
And a different time of combat, but let's bring it back home.
Sure.
We're recording this on, what is it, March 3rd? Tomorrow, when we drop this show, it'll be March 4th. We have a lot to cover, but talk about what could happen this week. Because you were very good at predicting the future. Why is tomorrow significant on the national security calendar? And for someone who maybe isn't reading all the defense briefs and listening to Pentagon testimony, why is this week uniquely important?
Well, it's important because after the insurrection on January 6th, there were a lot of disturbed followers of the QAnon conspiracy theory that had been pretty sure that they were going to stop the certification of the election of Joe Biden. Same thing with all of the insurrectionists, right-wing militias. They were all upset. When that didn't happen, they put all their hopes on a conspiracy theory that it was actually Donald Trump who had bought the National Guard into the Capitol area, and that he was in fact going to carry out a QAnon belief called the Great Awakening and the Storm. The Great Awakening would be that Trump would use the armed forces to carry out the storm, which is going after all liberal elites who, by the way, in their estimation, anyone who is liberal is a pedophile, who is child sex trafficking and killing children for their blood in order for them to stay young. So this is a fundamental QAnon belief. And they thought that Trump was going to carry out the storm before January 20th. Lo and behold, Joe Biden gets inaugurated on the morning of January 20th. And the entire QAnon world's heads explode. Why didn't all this stuff we predicted happen? We were, they were depending on the U.S. military to overthrow the government and then put all the liberals in Guantanamo Bay. I'm not joking. This is what they said. Or execute them. They were expecting them to be executed. Fast forward to what do we do now? What they did now was they came up with a new conspiracy theory that Joe Biden is not actually the 46th president of the United States. Because in fact, since 1932, if I'm not mistaken, since 1867, that the last president of the United States who was inaugurated on March 4th was Ulysses S. Grant. And that he is the last true president of the United States because it doesn't include the corporation of the United States, which started after Grant, and then they changed it to January 20th, which so actually didn't change until FDR. So
in QAnon world, March 4th is the real inauguration.
Yes, and it's going to be the inauguration of Donald Trump.
Right.
Wait for it, the 19th true president of the United States, not the 46th fake president.
Because none of them were, according to them, true after Ulysses S. Grant. Got it.
Yeah.
So this would have sounded really, alarmist, crazy back in October, maybe back even before January. Now people realize this shit is real, right? Even if we're talking about a small number of people, they have a proven track record of moving toward violence, of conspiracy, of coordination. This is not conspiracy theory. This is a real national threat, a domestic security threat. What do you think we could actually see on March 4th? They've hardened the Capitol. They've hardened a lot of state Capitol sites. What is possible and what is likely?
The reason that people call me Nanstradamus is not because I have any great insight. It's because I, as a former intelligence professional, I can read all the dots that are coming out of these organizations. And unlike journalists, I don't have to go down and interview these people. I can use a depth of experience to come up with a relatively good prediction. Here's what's going to happen tomorrow. Nothing. Nothing is going to happen tomorrow. In fact, they're so freaked out about how nothing is happening with Donald Trump that it must be part of a greater plan for Donald Trump to have the armed forces on his side. Just this morning, I was on one of their crazy websites called the Great Awakening .win, Great Awakening .win, and they have now convinced themselves. By the way, this is the only really extant QAnon website that's allowed,
right?
Because it's on a private server. They have convinced themselves that anything that happens tomorrow is not QAnon, but is a false flag by the liberal elite, child blood drinking, pedophile sex traffickers of the great conspiracy, or as they call it, the cabal. So they don't think they're going to do anything. There have been threats by militiamen to use that date, but that date was always associated with QAnon. So I suspect nothing's going to happen. This is called, in the intelligence world, it's called date flagging. They also use it in IT world. Date flagging, we used to have those little manuals that would be put out by the Office of Naval Intelligence or Directorate or CIA, which would have a calendar of the whole year. And it would say, Abu Nidal blew up this bomb on this date. And we would watch those dates to see if any sympathetic attacks were going to occur. With QAnon, every day is a new day to create up a new date. So they're now saying that date's not legitimate. Let's go for the real dates. We've also heard March 20th, because it's 90 days since the inauguration. Another person just today said, well, maybe they meant March 4th of next year. It is very flexible in their world for them to make up stuff and change stuff because, and I use this phrase as an intelligence professional, they crazy.
Right. So you've now, you know, gotten into the national dialogue, terms like vanilla ISIS and Y'al-Qaeda. you know, we've seen now what you mean after the insurrection on the Capitol. So, you know, there's also another factor here. Trump's been, you know, relatively quiet, right? Like he's at CPAC, but are they kind of going to ground? Are they fragmented? Are they waiting for him to give them orders? Like when you look at projecting for the threat, like, right, you know, General Milley and others have to, and the intelligence community has to, what can change all that? Obviously, you know, I've noted a couple of obvious things. You mentioned March 20th, you know, the irony is not lost on me. That's the start of the Iraq War. So we could always find a date. But how do you see this threat growing, shrinking, fragmenting as we go into the spring and go into the summer and maybe talk to you, you know, in another couple of months after it's metastasized again?
Well, first off, you have to understand this is a very disparate threat matrix that we have here. It is not one group. Even though you have right-wing militias of various stripes, the accelerationist boogaloo boys who want to bring an end to American democracy so that they can have their white racist world. You have the Proud Boys, which are just straight pro-Trump street brawler, now designated terrorist group, who did coordinate quite a bit of that attack on the Capitol. We're finding out they had as many as 6 mobile groups that were coordinating. They were on the Capitol Hill before the rally even started. So they were there to do damage. Yeah. You have many, many hundreds of disparate militia groups, which could range from 1 or 2 guys, you know, having a beer on a porch, to entire groups that have, you know, 100 members. So, and then you have this sort of overview motivational group, QAnon, in which their crazy is now permeated the Republican Party so much that it's almost becoming base ideology for the Republicans. No more fiscal conservatism. Now you have to believe that liberals are so horrible, they're baby blood drinking, you know, pedophile child sellers. And that's why you get people like Marjorie Taylor Greene and Lauren Boebert, who are now being elevated. Now, that is a wild range of ideologies in one big tent of crazy. The problem is that their entire being is, as you said, Donald Trump's every word. And this is what they've been waiting for. In fact, I've been writing a book about this since August. I sold the book in December. And, you know, my publisher said, hey, can you start delivering? And I said, yeah, I can. I can start delivering at the end of the month. However, I need to see what's going to happen between now and January 20th.
Right.
And all of this insanity broke out and it added 2 new chapters to this book. Now it is a question of what Trump's going to say and do. I'm quite surprised he didn't take over the Republican Party by changing its name to either the Trump Party or the Patriot Party.
Right.
But, you know, you never know. He may change the symbol from the elephant to that crazy lion symbol that they've been touting out there, the red, white, and blue lion.
Right.
But
it's all kind of shaking out, right? And
it's shaking out, but it really depends on what Trump does,
right,
and says, you know, and, you know, for Trump, it's all about the money. And the reason he's staying with the Republican Party is there's billionaires in the Republican Party. There's guys with 6-packs and $5 in the Trump Party. So that's why things are sort of stable now, and right, things were stable between December and January 6th. But if he decides to say he loses his mind again, he goes, I'm actually the real president of the United States, he will lay the political basis for the insurgency I've been claiming is coming.
And so, you know, the embers burn, right? And occasionally flare up. And I think the important thing that you noted that we've been talking about and predicting and watching is the rise of other leaders, like any other political or military insurgency. You know, when Saddam Hussein goes out, then Muqtada al-Sadr and others rise up. So similarly, right, from a political standpoint, now you've got Marjorie Taylor Greene. And if you're a pissed off QAnon supporter and you're not getting enough Trump, maybe you switch channels and listen to Marjorie Taylor Greene, right? And others will rise up. So as this is unfolding, part of what I really want to keep, I always say on this show, you know, stay vigilant. I want to stay vigilant in doing what maybe a lot of the other media isn't. They follow the bouncing Trump ball nonstop, right? Right. And I think, you know, they're covering CPAC endlessly. It creates great ratings. They get tons of reaction. But meanwhile, Biden ordered his first known strike as commander in chief on Iranian-backed forces in Syria. Now, there may have been other actions he's authorized. There probably were that we don't know about. But this is one they claimed. You know, they said they're sending a message. And you and I have talked for years now about escalating tensions with Iran. What's your take on that strike and where we see the situation with Iran and Syria and what it tells us about Biden? This feels like, you know, kind of an older generation of foreign policy and international affairs. He's not a next generation guy. I mean, we remember his stance on Iraq and others. So, you know, the idea that they're sending a message is fine, but the Iranians can send a message back too, and it's by no means a de-escalation, right?
Right. Well, you know, this is what I find rather perplexing about all of the media coverage over the airstrike in Syria. And I did coverage on it. You know, if this were to have happened any other day in the year, okay, it would have been called Tuesday. Because this is not an unusual thing in Iraq. Right? As a matter of fact, coalition air power is still used every day to go out and destroy ISIS facilities and suspected warehouses and other things like that. It's just that this was a Shia militia that was aligned with Iran that was operating across the border in Syria, right? And the only, you know, I don't even think that this was a very big strike. In fact, what they hit was a weapons storehouse, which we had a lot of intelligence about. And then what it was storing was the very battlefield rockets that they had used to hit the airbase at Erbil in Kurdistan, which, by the way, is a completely different separate part of Iraq that is ethnically separate. So that made a lot of people angry, you know, not just the Iraqis and not just the Americans killing a Filipino contractor. So this would have been a usual day-to-day thing, which would have been operationally left in the hands of the theater commander if President Biden had not decided to do an airstrike on a facility that was inside of Syria. So he had to sign off on it. And it wasn't a very big strike, and it didn't hit a very big building.
Right. But it is significant, Malcolm, in that he claimed it. Right. Like this, that's different, right? For the commander-in-chief to say, basically put out a press release and say, we did this, I did this, there's a new sheriff in town, this is our new doctrine. And I think that part of it is significant. It's almost insignificant in that it happens relatively often, but this was a very, very significant message from Biden to not only to the Iranians, but to the world, right?
Key point is that it was a significant message geopolitically vis-a-vis all of the players in that part of the world that, one, I'm not Donald Trump. Two, I think about what I hit, right? The Iranians, you guys shot bottle rockets. They shot 10 more off just this morning at the U.S. airbase at Al Asad, which is laughable because if you've ever been to Al Asad airbase, that's like saying I fired rockets at New Jersey. Right. You know, I mean, I think it's like 30 square miles. You have to hunt to hit the perimeter of Al Asad airbase. You have to be the Iranian government, right? Use those strategic battlefield ballistic missiles to actually hit someplace with precision there. So this is normal escalation. But for Biden to have brought it out, he was sending a message that, you know, one, we cannot be pushed around. Two, you cannot strike us in Kurdistan and operate your rockets from Syria and think that we're not going to do something about it. Okay. Next operation, we don't know. Maybe it'll be an on-the-ground operation. Maybe they will now pressure the Iraqi government to do more to rein in the SMUs, the Syrian, you know, the or PMUs, the popular mobilization units, the Shia militias. But you have to understand, Syria operates a number of these Shia militias as well that back the government of Iran and back the government of Bashar al-Assad. So we were sending a message to the West and to the East, and in a full circle around there as well.
So can I stay on that? Can we kind of globetrot a little bit? Because again, same week or two period, they sort of send a message to the Saudis on the murder of Khashoggi that we now have more information about. And the message was kind of, right? It was like, we're not happy about this, but we're really not going to punish you, right? They could have gone harder, and they could have gone softer, and they kind of took the middle route, and Biden got hammered, right? Biden got hammered from all sides, right? And now the question is, you know, we send a message to Iran, we're going to be tough with you. We send a message to the Saudis, which to me sounded like kind of a slap on the wrist. Like, don't do that. This is very complicated, is what they keep saying, right? It's very complicated. We need you in more ways than we can tell the public. And so we're going to try to split the difference and see how the politics go. And now it seems as though they're even doing some cleanup efforts, trying to figure out ways to be harder in public, right?
The beautiful part about this entire discussion we're having right now is, doesn't this seem normal? Isn't this just great? We're back to regular diplomacy and geopolitics. But let me touch on the Khashoggi thing and releasing the intelligence report, which was meant to lend credibility to what was coming out. The purpose of this was to send a message to Saudi Arabia, but not the one most in the news media think. They, you know, I've worked in the Middle and lived in the Middle East for over 36 years. You know, I have a Ramadan room here that it's all Arab pillows from wall to wall, right? You walk in there, you think you're in a diwan. You know, the message that was being sent was quite simple. You can't buy me the way you bought Trump. If I think it's in our interest, it's going to happen. For example, you murdered a U.S. visa card, a U.S. resident who had lived here on a visa. I'm telling the world with 100% credibility, you did it. You won't do this again. And the United States, the next time, will have to sanction you and all of your money. Here's another thing that's not going to happen. You're not going to be buying our intelligence. And at this point, we've got so many F-35 sales, we don't care whether you buy our weapons or not. Go to Russia and buy Su-57s so that you can start facing off against your mortal enemy, Iran, with the exact same weapons that you bought from, that you're buying from Russia, right? I thought this was an overdue message. Mm-hmm. Saudi Arabia needed to be talked. When they ran into Trump, for the first time in their history, they realized that they could buy an American president straight up cash. Him and Jared Kushner are manipulable. And remember what they said. Mohammed bin Salman said, I have Kushner in my pocket.
Right.
All right.
So let's stay on this. You know, sure. Biden's stopping bleeding. He's resetting tables. He's trying to reopen the bloat. Right. He's got a dying patient on the table, and he's patching up wounds everywhere. Right. And trying to prioritize them as new bullet holes come flying into the body. Right. And simultaneously, he's fighting the pandemic back home and the economic situation, and he's trying to stand up a Secretary of Defense in Austin, who I think has actually been off to a good start.
Right. Right.
This guy must be working 24 hours a day, calling everyone around the world, and I think smartly tackling military sexual assault and violent extremism. And he is, you know, he's exceeding my expectations, right? I was critical of the waiver that he got, not because it was him, but because of the precedent. But he's off to, I think, a smart start. But let's stay with the message going globally. We're also dealing with Russia. So now, you know, Navalny's in jail. We have new Russian sanctions, and we sent another message. Hey, here's $125 million in weapons to the Ukraine. So what do you see over there?
Okay.
on that world tour?
First, let me touch on your analogy of the United States being, you know, a battlefield trauma wounded patient who is having holes punched up. We're beyond that. We're on the medevac flight to Landstuhl Hospital in Germany now. The patient's going to make it. They're going to get stabilized in Europe, and then they're going to fly back for rehabilitation to the United States.
That's great. I like that. That's really well put. That's well put.
We are not. It was battlefield, you know, plug a tampon into a whole medicine under Donald Trump.
Yeah.
You know, and the only thing that was keeping the patient alive was, you know, the will of the patient and the medical team known as the American people that was putting us back together again. Now, as we fly towards Russia, I view Russia as a very minor complication. The very fact that Russia kept attacking us and using cyber warfare over all these years. Remember, Russia today attacked me personally, right? And in their lame attempt to discredit me when I had mistakenly on the fly said Vladimir Putin was a director of the KGB when he was actually the first director of the post-KGB intelligence agency, the FSB, you know, they did this lame attack to say, MSNBC Russia expert thinks Putin was a KGB director. And then I came back with FSB equals KGB hashtag. And when that got 50,000 likes, they, you know, and over 3 or 4 million impressions, they didn't like that because they like to use their disinformation offensively. They really can't handle the consequences of disinformation. They understood that with Donald Trump, anything goes, and which is why they took the risk to attack the United States. So now, as they're working on an internal threat to the stability of Vladimir Putin's oligarchy, which is a populist, look, Navalny isn't the greatest guy in the world. He's sort of an open anti-immigrant activist. He's sort of an open racist. But you know what? For a Russian, that's moderate. Okay, what he's not is, let's nuke the Western world and let's collapse the entire Western order. That's Vladimir Putin.
Right.
This
well,
guy just
what he does stand for is the most visible opposition to Putin.
Opposition. Which is why I'm saying, I mean, in comparison to Putin,
yeah.
I mean, you know, I mean, Navalny is a flaming Western liberal in comparison to that. Right. And it's good because, you know, I recently have been working with Nadia Kolonivskaya. I'm pretty sure I'm pronouncing that right. The one of the singers, lead singer of Pussy Riot, who is here in the United States trying to, you know, gin up support for Navalny. But look, Navalny must have been the most mortal threat in the history of Russia. And here's why. Vladimir Putin used the most lethal poison in the history of mankind. Novichok, a Cold War ballistic missile delivered chemical weapon to kill a guy by lacing his freaking underwear with it. And as you know, they found out because Navalny helped trap one of the officers who did it by calling and pretending that he was actually one of his senior commanders.
Is that right? I didn't know that.
Yes, and actually got him to confess in recording.
Okay.
And the guy goes, listen, we didn't know that the Germans were going to be so efficient keeping him alive. This stuff is supposed to be lethal.
Okay, so this is like, we need to do a whole series just on the madness of that Navalny incident.
Yes.
But as that happens, you know, Putin's got his own problems now domestically that he's trying.
But now he's got a bigger problem. Yeah. He has Joe Biden.
Right.
Because Joe Biden yesterday or Tuesday implemented what I had been calling for 5 years, which is punishment sanctions. And I think he should have used the word punishment instead of just using the word sanctions. They should say punishing sanctions because they are going after. I have been advocating the philosophy of take they money. For the last 5 years. Don't go after the Russian people. Go after every oligarch in that country that had anything to do with, and this is what the sanctions were about, the bounties on U.S. soldiers. They were about the SolarWinds hacking of the information software, you know, management system at the 9 U.S. government agencies.
Which, by the way, no one in America is talking about anymore.
No, because we're just shutting up and trying to plug
because
holes.
We're covering CPAC nonstop and Ted Cruz's world travel, right?
Yeah, and Dr. Seuss.
No, like, I think it's important. I want to stay on that for a second because maybe that was the most damaging component of the last. We don't know, right, how damaging that coordinated cyber attack was. And maybe we'll find out over time, or maybe it'll get worse and it's still ongoing. But that is something that's on no one's radar in the national media and on the political. You don't hear anybody.
Right, else. Yeah, it was too complex for people to describe. It's as simple as this. SolarWinds was a information management program that was used. It's an enterprise program, which means it's across corporations. That's used by 100 different corporations that were attacked and 9 U.S. government agencies. The Russians, they said they had to have had 1,000 engineers on this project, 1,000, to build in a back door into this system that worked through all U.S. government, these 9 government agencies. They said the U.S. government didn't even know they were using SolarWinds in some organizations. So that massive hack was an espionage operation, which was preparing for future operations. It wasn't like they seized the power plant like they did in the Ukraine. So, but also these sanctions were about the Navalny poisoning, They also included the attack on the United States in 2016 for the DNC. So Joe Biden has just decided he's making all these things personal. And I like that. And I think that what they ought to do is also get the United States to sign off on the Global Magnitsky Act, which was forwarded by Bill Browder. That is a seize their assets anywhere in the world if you're a Russian oligarch. So when you fly from Moscow and you land in Monaco to pick up your croissants for this morning's breakfast and your chef puts the 20 croissants on board, then turns around and starts flying for Dolomedevo Airport in Moscow, they seize your aircraft in Monaco and turn it over to the United States government.
Well, and they also, I think that Biden probably could have done a better job of denying Putin the ability to say that these are sanctions against the Russian people, which is what he'll do, right? Just like in Cuba and everywhere else.
You know, and I think he has a brilliant opportunity to do that by, one, blacklisting Russia today from the United States. I'm finding out that Russia Today is one of the most insidious right-wing disinformation organs in the world. And that, you know, a lot of right-wingers watch it like it is religion.
Watch RT.
Russia Today, RT, yeah, Russia Today, which is essentially the old Soviet Pravda, right? In television form.
Which will make a nice companion if you were going to create like the radical threatening to America cable package and you put like Newsmax, OANN, RT, you could put them in one special bundle, right? And help contribute to the destruction of America. But so I want to, there's a lot to cover. I think that's an important stop for us to make on this tour, but you brought up something that I got to talk to you about. So making it personal, you and I have been on many cable networks and I, you know, everything from BBC to Comedy Central, you're on MSNBC often. I have been as well, but not nearly as often as you. And with that, admittedly, for me, comes complications, right? Like I go on Fox, I go on MSNBC, I'll go anywhere I can, you know, add an impact and illuminate and analyze a subject. But something very unique happened to you this week. And I texted you on Friday and said, are you fucking watching Fox News right now? And I figured a lot of people had contacted you because let me summarize for the viewers what happened. Laura Ingraham on Fox News decided that she was going to name you as an enemy to her audience. That's how I'm summarizing, right?
That's true.
Here's Malcolm Nance. Here's who he is. Let's pick apart anything that he might have missaid. Here's a tweet that, you know, you can address that maybe was taken out of context or maybe was just a bad tweet. But they're trying to create this narrative that you are basically an enemy of America and a tool of the America-hating liberals and MSNBC and trying to discredit you. And I think what I was concerned about as a friend and as someone who's worked with you before, you know, they named you. They basically put you up to their audience, which includes QAnon supporters and crazy people, and said, this guy is bad. It was what they do. Right. And right. What Laura Ingraham is masterful at doing. But I want to ask you to respond. What is it like to be named an enemy by Fox News?
And, well, you know,
and what's happened since?
You know, it's not actually the first time. I've been in the A block, the first segment of Tucker Carlson's show twice. And what I find is that many they're losing steam. And I was quite surprised to be named by Laura Ingraham. And the purpose of Laura Ingraham naming me and doing an entire 5 minute segment. Okay, 5 minutes is a lifetime on television, right? That's in between commercials.
Yeah.
And was because I had testified before Congress the day before. I was on with Andy Ngo, that's NGO, the right wing writer who was there, who came out to say Black Lives Matter was a terrorist group. But I just took him apart. I said, protest isn't terrorism, but insurrection can be. And then, of course, I was backed up by other experts on there as well. And in fact, right behind one of the congressmen was a tweet that I had done in 2017. That tweet was only up for 20 minutes, right? It was out of context because it was taking place in a discussion about Trump Tower, Istanbul. And during a week that ISIS had carried out 3 suicide bombings against facilities in Istanbul, right? So I looked at it and I said, well, you know, as a terrorism expert, that wasn't said in there. But within this stream of tweets, I said, well, I nominate that place to be the first Trump Tower property to be attacked by ISIS suicide bombers. Now, in my world, this is called an assessment, right? It's called a high confidence assessment. But in right-wing media world, now, can I point out to you, this was like March 2017. Yeah, so we're 3 years out from this.
And what they did was they said, look, this guy's telling ISIS they should hit Trump Tower.
Right.
And, you know, and here's, you know, one line from 2017. Here's one line from It is a narrative they construct from pieces, right, without context. And it's masterful in some ways. It's propaganda. Well,
my favorite part of that whole thing, and I still have yet to reply, I'm going to respond to her.
Yeah,
at my time, because what she did was she showed a series of photographs of me with like some of my books at book events, but they showed me in civilian clothing the whole time.
Right.
Right. And I'm famous for being a military guy. Right. I mean, you go on my Twitter feed, I was doing all my Desert Storm 30 stuff this year, the 30th anniversary of Desert Storm, putting up photos of me in circumstances that people would go, whoa, why do you have an RPG-7? You know, because I was out blasting bunkers with 5th Group Special Forces for fun and, you know, all these things. And I just thought, this is very interesting, the propaganda value of this here. And then it comes out and says, and then he encouraged terrorism or encouraged violence by asking for ISIS to attack a Trump Tower.
Can I unpack one other point of this? Because there's so much to this, right? That, you know, we could do an entire case study on what this means about America and our media and our politics. This is a white host and a largely white audience identifying you as a radical threat to that white audience as one of the few, maybe only black voices on national security in the American media landscape. So, you know, she picked you for a number of reasons and you hit a lot of buttons for that audience. But can you talk about that component in particular? Because there was a racial dynamic to all of it.
Oh, yeah. Oh, well, I've found since I'm one of maybe three, let's count them four if you include Secretary of DHS Jay Johnson, right? I mean, okay, there's now five if you throw in my buddy Earl Suthers, who I'm from USC, FBI guy. There's so me, Naveed Jamali, there's a gentleman on Telemundo, and Jay Johnson and Earl Suthers. Yeah, that's it.
And then you've got also, like, in the, you know, Colin Powell is long gone. There's a new Secretary of Defense chosen by Biden who's also black. You know, there are other voices.
But in terms of national security commentators,
right?
That's it. And my claim to fame and my entire living and being is the fact that I was a field intelligence collector, okay? I was not management. And so what she did in the second part of that program was even more insidious. She brought on a white ex-FBI guy who never worked counterterrorism, never worked counterintelligence, who wrote a book about, you know, the liberal plot to dismantle the FBI. And Andy Ngo, and her whole shtick was, this guy's not an expert. And there's a reason for that. Because every time somebody tries the Malcolm Nance is not an expert routine, they always go to some really sketchy source. Like this one guy wrote an article for SOFREP, right? Which is a special forces blog or something like that. And he claims he was in the military with me. I've never addressed this. You're going to like this story. I was in the military at the same time Colin Powell was. I can't say I knew Colin Powell, right? And also, this guy was like an E4 when I was a Navy chief. That's like Sergeant First Class, right? And he claimed he was told to throw me bodily out of a command. Said no E4 ever. Okay. But then we later find out this guy is a twice convicted felon.
I think for folks maybe that aren't in the arena, this should be especially fascinating, because the reality is that many of the folks who are in politics and in media are in danger. And right. I think you're doing, you know, something that is patriotic. You're not always right. We don't always agree. You know, I would love to see more voices like yours in places like Fox and other places, but none of that removes the fact that you've been right about a lot of things, right? And
pretty much everything.
You continue to be right about a lot of things, and you are identifying a threat to America, which is important in this environment, and maybe our most, you know, immediate imminent threat, which is the extremist threat. So this was a really dangerous thing she did, which basically was appealing to the same voices and naming you as an enemy to people who could do harm to you, to many other people around you. And I want to note that. Because,
let me show you how dangerous it was.
Yeah.
So here's my favorite piece of mail that came the day after. All right. I'm going to bleep it for you because of the things. But when that first thing came out in 2017, I got about 50 death threats a year. Right. And it completely dropped off over the last 2 years. Even guys like Jack Posobiec and Chernovich, these right wing idiots, they just couldn't get anything to stick to me because I'm a black guy. And, you know, I got a DD-214 that's a public record that's out there. Right. So they're like, we can't get this guy. So they go after the blackness. And here's an email I got after Laura Ingraham's show, which, you know, I can't decide how liable Fox News is for this. But if it should come to pass, they could be quite liable. Here it is. You and your stupid porch monkeys like you need to keep your N-word mouth shut. Meanwhile, you N-words murder each other in record numbers. You don't even have the spine to help your own communities, you F-word. You are a disgrace and a traitor. Was it not you who recommended ISIS attack New York, you F-word, F-word? I hope someone blows your head off at N-word. Hang from a tree, F word. That I got the night after that. So Laura Ingraham herself stoked violence, put the threat of violence here. And you know what? If she does not actually know that I am a member of ISIS and that has evidence that I directed ISIS to carry out violence, then what she did was slander me on television. You know, these days, $1 billion is about where lawsuits start these days against major corporations. I would recommend that Laura Ingraham post a photograph of me, the official U.S. Navy photograph of my retirement, where I'm wearing all 36 of my medals, right? Pre-9/11, to give you an idea of the kind of warfare, secret warfare I was involved in. And then apologize to me for having had people threaten my life on the mistake that she had erringly put up that poster and said, essentially, that I had threatened violence. Because if she doesn't, she personally could be held liable. I'm just saying, that's a recommendation I would make.
So you've given us an insight into what happens here behind the scenes when the cameras go off. And I think I try very hard with this show to add light to contrast to heat, especially around issues of national security, defense, veterans issues, where the stakes are higher, right? The stakes are higher. And now the intersection of our domestic and foreign policy and military affairs and veterans affairs is all at a really dangerous point. So anybody who has a microphone, whether you have five people on your Twitter account or you're talking to a Fox News audience, I hope in the interest of the country will do everything they can to lower the heat, right?
Yes.
And to absolutely not name people as enemies. But this is happening, right? And this happened on Friday. We're recording on Wednesday. I worry for you. I worry for the people who are around you, right? You might be at MSNBC. I mean, you know, there are plenty of scenarios, right? My wife used to worry about me going to CNN to do an interview about veterans affairs because CNN was getting bomb threats. So let me ask you a tough question, right? You've kind of telegraphed or illuminated your experience and I hope have really woke people up to what's happening in our politics and in our media. But what do you think we do? What does America do? If I'm not a partisan, this is independent Americans. A lot of our audience is independent. A lot of them don't like MSNBC and don't like Fox. Sure. but they care about our national security. They care about this precarious moment. How do we go above that and deal with what is, you know, what is totally counterproductive to everything we're trying to do to stabilize this country at a tough time?
You know, I'm one of my other claim to fames is the fact that I have a very, very, how can I put it? I maintain my own personal dignity and honor when I'm doing my work. You can question anything you want about me. I mean, there's the guys out there like, oh, this guy, some guy goes, he stole all those medals, right? You can say all that stupid stuff because I defended you my entire life, literally with my body, to allow you to say all the dumb things that you want to say, right? But what you can never do is question my honor. You just can't. Because one, I'm going to come right up in your face and defend it, right? And here's what I'm going to throw at you. I'm going to throw at you the official record, which is going to make you look stupid. Because, you know, you get these, like I said, you have these guys just like, oh, this guy, you know, the crazy, before QAnon, you had Louis Mensch, right? The Luanon. And he was like, your interpreters of Arabic have nothing to do with the U.S. intelligence community. And it's like, that's like saying, yeah, all those German linguists that were breaking the Enigma code in World War II, right, weren't in intelligence. People are stupid, and you need to be called out for stupid. But for those of us who are normal folks, all right, and I'm a normal folk, I just tell you things because I want you to be safe. I don't want American citizens to get hurt. And now I have American citizens that are the risk. And for people who are in between, people who are unknowing, it's as simple as this. Nothing we do or say should advocate the overthrow of the government of the United States or forward what we can see with our own eyes, right? I have people trying to tell me the election was stolen and people would say Joe Biden didn't get more than 50 million votes. You know, we can count.
Right.
And every court in America threw that out. If you manifest that big lie, you are motivating violence. People have killed now for that lie. Yeah. And everyone in who is not the crazy 35% that have now bought into this need to defend the honor of this nation, right? They cannot go along with an alternative view of America in which QAnon is the dominant ideology and loyalty to Donald Trump as a person and not to the Constitution. It needs to be ignored. And that's why I always bring up the memo that the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff put out on the 7th of January. The United States Armed Forces is loyal to the Constitution of the United States. It does not take part in elections, and it definitely will not tolerate enemies, both foreign and domestic, at threatening the Constitution.
I think that is an important touchstone for us to keep coming back to, because General Milley testified, you know, today, I believe, and underscored that, you know, don't blame the National Guard here, that they didn't get there fast enough, because the National Guard is not built to move pretty quickly. And even if they had been, right, you know, they weren't prepared. And the failure really was at the White House to say, have forces properly staged to anticipate a threat to begin with, right? The failure to plan was a plan to fail. And now you're hearing that from General Milley, the chairman of the Joint Chiefs, and we'll continue to pull that apart. And I hope those voices resonate. I hope that they can help wake people up, because we're going to go through what might be hotter times before things do cool down. Let me ask you this, Malcolm. What's the national security story that nobody's talking about, that media isn't covering, that threatens people over Republicans, Democrats, and everything in between, and isn't getting any coverage in the national media and politics?
I'm glad you asked me that. All right.
Yeah.
While we're sitting here, besides the fact that we really, really, really need to pay attention to the right-wing crazies in the United States, right? There are all these, costume role play, live action role play characters out there who should in fact be running around in Pikachu costumes and not pretending that they're special forces or characters from, you know, Medal of Honor. What's happening in sub-Saharan Africa is getting a little disturbing now. there are three new ISIS battlefronts that are exploding. Interesting fact, one of them was because Donald Trump had tried to withdraw all U.S. forces from Somalia. And quietly, the Biden administration said, ignore everything that was said to you. You're going full bore. So the U.S. forces and the Somalis just did an offensive against Shabaab, which is the ISIS branch, Al-Qaeda ISIS branch in Somalia. On the other hand, Russian mercenaries and now South African mercenaries are running rampant again. Donald Trump backed a former CIA asset who I had a history with. I'll just leave it at that. Khalifa Haftar, the guy who was running Eastern Libya and was trying to take over the entire government of Libya with Russian mercenaries funded by the United Arab Emirates. So they have failed at that thus far, and the Russians are flexing. The only reason they failed at it, the Turks intervened with Turkish mercenaries. It is crazy in Libya. And the final one is Mozambique. And you're going to sit there and go, Mozambique? What do I care about Mozambique? You guys know Mozambique is a Portuguese-speaking country. It had been embroiled in civil war forever. It had a communist insurgency. It was communist government, but it had an insurgency going. That is now, Mozambique also has oil fields and natural gas fields off of its northeastern shore. ISIS is making a big play in Mozambique, and they actually took over an entire city in that country. So, and the Mozambicans hired South African mercenaries.
I'm glad you flagged this, because we can always play the game of where might our kids in the military might get sent, right? Like my father, you know, never would have said, you know, Iraq or wherever, Syria, right? Like you're kind of picking on a map and you're identifying sub-Saharan Africa. We don't talk enough about South America. The issue, the area that I've been continuing to flag is the Arctic, which continues to be a flashpoint for many of the world's military forces. And I would not be surprised if my son's in the military one day and gets deployed to the Arctic, right? But these are the spaces I want to continue to cover. I think there's no more important time to stay vigilant about national security than when no one's paying attention to national security. Everyone is waiting for the vaccine. Maybe they're taking a breath because things are a little calmer, but we still have, you know, significant exposure. I love the analogy of the patient that's on its way to Landstuhl, because I do think that's true. I think we're on the mend, we're moving forward, but we gotta stay vigilant and keep after it. You've been contributing tremendously, I think, to keeping these issues front and center. I wish MSNBC would give you your own show. I hope we can do a podcast with you on Righteous Media. We'll talk more about that. But I do really appreciate that you've been in the fights, and it's hard and it's important, especially right now. But go ahead.
One quick plug. Former Admiral Jim Stavridis, who is Supreme Allied Commander of NATO, he has a new book coming out called 2034. Get him on.
He was on a couple months ago and he talked about that book, and I want to get him back on. His book is coming out next week, I think, right?
That book is scary.
All right. Well, so a lot of scary shit. Let's take
that's Asia.
Let's end on something that's not so scary, but it's still difficult. The new question we've got in season two, now that we're independent Americans, try to bring people together. We try to represent the unaffiliated, but you've got to choose between one question where there is no middle ground. Malcolm Nance, pancake or waffles?
Oh, waffles. Because my lovely wife, who was French Canadian, all right, would make pancakes, but she preferred what they called gophers, which is waffles in French. Gophers.
I love it.
And she has a beautiful little waffle maker downstairs. And we now, every time we make waffles, we get all misty eyed, but gophers. I prefer gophers.
That's a wonderful answer. I was really privileged and honored to meet your wife. That time we had lunch at Ron Tavern Perlman. On the Green. It was the three of us and Ron Perlman.
Yeah. Ron.
Which was a movie scene in and of itself, right?
Yes.
Four really interesting people walk into lunch at Tavern on the Green. It was kind of a weird movie scene, but it was a real pleasure.
The funny part was the little English kids that recognized them as the Beast in Beauty and the Beast.
That's right.
That's right. What? That's right.
But I especially appreciate how much you've been doing, you know, during what I know is a tough time for you and your family. And I think, I hope that this conversation, you know, wakes people up, right? In so many different ways. It's a time to stay vigilant. It's a time to remember that we need true patriots to step up. And the best way you can do that right now, in my view, is to stay vigilant. And you're helping us do that every day. So I appreciate you. When it's 8 degrees out, you need some waffles. Oh, I'm going to send you some more Uncle Nearest.
Yes.
Yes. You'll need that. You know, support of our show, and it'll help you along. Might be good on waffles. Here's a plug. Uncle Nearest, great on waffles. And it'll help you
get
into.
Did you send me one last time?
I'm sorry?
Did you send me one?
I'm supposed to. If we haven't yet, it's on the way. It's taking a long time for us to get stuff.
Okay. Yeah, it hadn't come.
So I owe you, I think I owe you a couple bottles at this point, but it's
coming. Black Jack Daniels.
That's right. That's
right.
He's
the guy who created Jack Daniels, and he was the Mark Chair.
Taking this full circle, if they do a movie about your next book, maybe our friend Jeffrey Wright, who introduced us to Uncle Nearest, could play you.
Ooh, salty. I like it.
He's played spies before.
All right.
So if that happens, we got to have a big reunion, lots of waffles and lots of whiskey. But my friend Malcolm Nance, thank you for all you do. Thanks for spending so much time with us and keeping us aware. And stay safe out there and stay vigilant, my friend.
Thanks.
Hope is the oxygen of our democracy. It's the ammunition for the fight. And our democracy has never needed that oxygen more than in the last few months. That's a powerful message that we shared in the last episode of this show with my friend Darren Walker, president of the Ford Foundation. And it's a message we're going to continue to spread. So especially now, to strengthen our national defense and our minds, we need to spread hope. It's a way to support the war effort, to keep the fire in these critical final few weeks of winter. So be a super spreader of hope. Spread it where you can, whether it's news about the vaccine or news about a baby being born or plans you're making when the country's back open. Spread the hope and keep the oxygen of our democracy flowing. Hope is the air we need. So we got to keep breathing. Breathe in that hope. Come on, let's do it. Ready? Nice. Especially in these final few hard weeks of winter, when so many are worn out and so many want to give up, keep breathing in that oxygen and that hope, and encourage others to do the same. Be like those kids in Mrs. Zeidel's fourth grade class. Be like Mrs. Zeidel. Be a helper. Spread the light, the hope, and the good information. It's how we fight misinformation and conspiracy theories. It's how we fight extremism and enemies of the future. It's how we fight the virus. We can all be helpers, just like those kids, just like that teacher, and just like Mr. Rogers told us about.
Always look for the helpers. There will always be helpers, you know, even just on the sidelines, because if you look for the helpers, you'll know that there's hope.
And there's one great American leader that is a true helper that would make Mr. Rogers proud. A leader that's spreading hope much faster than the stupid. A leader who's been doing it for decade after decade. And a leader who shows that everyone can be a fighter and everyone can be a helper. Dolly Parton.
Well, hey, it's me. I'm finally going to get my vaccine. I'm so excited. I've been waiting a while. I'm old enough to get it, and I'm smart enough to get it. So I'm very happy that I'm going to get my Moderna shot today. And I wanted to tell everybody, I think you should get out there and do it too. I even changed one of my songs to fit the occasion. It goes, vaccine, 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 vaccine. I'm begging of you, please don't hesitate. Vaccine, 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 vaccine. Because once you're dead, then that's a bit too late. I know I'm trying to be funny now, but I'm dead serious about the vaccine. I think we all want to get back to normal, whatever that is, and that would be a great shot in the arm, wouldn't it, if we could get back to that. But anyhow, I just wanted to encourage everybody, because the sooner we get to feeling better, the sooner we are going to get back to being normal. So I just want to say to all of you cowards out there, don't be such a chicken squat. Get out there and get shot.
How awesome is that? Don't be such a chicken squat. Get the shot. Dolly is amazing. Dolly is a helper. And Dolly is bringing hope when we need it the most. And there was a tweet that Dolly put out that said, Dolly gets a dose of her own medicine. Because Dolly's making shit happen. Last April, as the pandemic was hitting, Dolly Parton announced a $1 million donation to Vanderbilt University. And that money helped fund three pandemic-related research projects, including one related to the Moderna vaccine. So this week, Dolly literally got a dose of her own medicine. Dolly's the kind of helper we need. And she, of course, would be welcome on this show anytime. But listen to Dolly. Don't be such a chicken squat. Get the shot. That needs to go on t-shirts everywhere. Thank you, Dolly, for setting the example. Thanks for being a helper. And thanks to all the other helpers that made this episode happen, especially Malcolm Nance. Follow him on Twitter, get his books, watch for him in the media and on MSNBC. Or if you can't stand MSNBC, just find clips of him and stay tuned to see what happens in his battle with Laura Ingraham. That shit clearly ain't over. Independent Americans are the future, and Malcolm Nance is a key part of it, and he's a true helper. Other helpers that continue to make this work possible, the fearless Righteous Media team, Mighty Mercy Rich, creative Chris Rosenthal, and brilliant Bill Schultz, and of course, their families and their dogs and everyone else that's a part of Team Righteous. And if you like this episode, be a helper. Go to the Apple Podcast Store and give us 5 stars. Subscribe for free. It's 100% free, and share. And you can visit us on social media and check out independentamericans.us. It continues to improve, independentamericans.us. And we have new merch coming. It'll be there, I hope, next week, but it's hot and it's coming. So hang in there and go to independentamericans.us for more. You can also see video of this conversation with Malcolm Nance. You can see what the penis gourd looks like. And you can see over 100 episodes with leaders from Chuck D to Chuck Hagel, Sarah Jessica Parker to Meghan McCain, Stephen Colbert to Mayor Pete Buttigieg, all on the Righteous Media YouTube page. You can also now find me on Clubhouse. What the hell is Clubhouse? Well, apparently it's the newest app social media platform. It's not the Mickey Mouse kids show that my 2-year-old is obsessed with. And I did a poll on Twitter and asked folks, what is Clubhouse? 7.4% said, it's the next big thing. 12.5% said it's terrestrial radio for 2021. 15% said it's not exclusive after all. And a whopping 65% said it's an annoying conference call. Folks may be divided on Clubhouse, just like they are on waffles versus pancakes, but waffles has been on a run on this show for the last couple weeks. And Americans may be more divided than ever, but Independent Americans is adding light to contrast the heat of the other political shows. We're going to continue to bring the Five Eyes. And if you're among the 40% of Americans who are independent, this is your show. If you're a Republican or Democrat, but you're not a diehard partisan, this is your show. If you're a concerned American who cares about the future of your country, this is your show. If you're really into whiskey or pancakes or waffles, this is your show. All are welcome, and we invite you to join us and be a part of the solution. And I invite you to be a part of our exclusive Independent Americans Patreon community. For just $5, you get access to our events, our guests, merch discounts, and exclusive content. Please consider supporting this show and becoming a member of our Patreon community. Patreon rocks. It continues to add power to this show. And I want to welcome our newest member, Rob with 2 B's. No last name. Rob joined us this month. He became a $5 patron, a member of The Vigilant. You can join Rob as a part of that Vigilant community if you look for Independent Americans on Patreon. And we will be doing a special cocktail hour on Zoom for Patreon members only with me this Friday, March 8th at 8:30 Eastern.
join me, have a drink. We'll do some prizes. We'll talk about some news. We will try not to talk about Mr. Potato Head, but you can join people across the country, including my mom, by joining us and becoming a member of the Vigilant, the Very Vigilant, or the Most Vigilant. My thanks to all of you. And my thanks, of course, to my wife and my two boys. My son's second birthday was awesome. It was different, but it was awesome. It was a Mickey Mouse theme party. Yes, I wore ears. Cookie Monster was also featured. We had a very small group, a very safe gathering, but no kids, because there are no kids in our pod. It was very sweet, because my kids have been bringing so much levity to so many people in our community and in our family. But I also reflected on the fact that my son's two and basically doesn't have any friends, because he hasn't been able to play with kids much in the last year. But he has his brother, and he has our family, and we have each other. And he has some other special friends, like Mickey Mouse, like Cookie Monster, and a very, very special friend, Trash Truck. Now, if you're looking for some hope, I got you. Trash Truck is a Netflix show about the adventures of a six-year-old boy named Hank and his best friend, Trash Truck. A honking, snorting, yep, trash truck. It was created by a guy named Max Keen, based on his then two-year-old son's real-life love of trash trucks. Because if you have a little one, they probably love trash trucks. And this show is about a six-year-old boy and his journeys around the world with his friends. His friends, Trash Truck, Walter the Bear, Donnie the Raccoon, and Mona the Mouse, my wife's favorite. And I love Mona too. They are my favorite non-people in America. And if they were in Congress, America would be healed by next week. But Trash Truck is sweet, it's fun, it's beautiful, it's smart, and it's hopeful. And it's about a guy who's the ultimate helper, a trash truck. And it's the kind of energy we need right now. If you have a kid, Trash Truck is a no-brainer. Even if you don't have a kid, this is a no-brainer. So here's my homework. Watch an episode of Trash Truck on Netflix. It's only 11 minutes. It'll give you hope, I promise. If you don't have Netflix, you can watch at least one episode for free on YouTube. I checked. I think it's the Christmas episode. But we all need a little perspective. We all need a little hope. Hope is the oxygen for our democracy, but also for life. And we all could use a little more hope right now. My mom got her first shot. My brother-in-law got his today. Gail got hers today. My dad has gotten his. More and more people in our community and our family are getting the shot. And my best friend Todd and his wife Katie are having a baby right now as I record this. We don't know if it's a boy or girl, but the baby is coming any minute, so congrats. I can't wait to meet this little one soon. And it's just another sign that the hope is out there, even when times are tough. So raise it up, put it in a song like Dolly, take a deep gulp of it, and pass it on. And we'll keep this movement growing week by week by week. And we will stay vigilant, because eternal vigilance is the price of freedom. And with the hope in our lungs and in our hearts, it's the path to better days. Pass the hope. And know you're not alone in your vigilance. We're all vigilant. And we're all in this together. From Malcolm Nance, to Laura Ingraham, to Dolly Parton, to Trash Truck, to New Baby Sutler, to you. We're all in this together. I'm your host, Paul Rykoff. Thanks for listening. Stay frosty. And stay vigilant, America. Honk, honk.